summer turbulence. How high is high enough to avoid it? I'm Paul Platt, and this is Aero News. Welcome into this Aero News special feature. Thanks for downloading us today. My guest is, as often the case on Mondays, is Bob Miller of Over the Airwaves, the Journal for the Proficient Pilot. And Bob also has a flight training school based at the Buffalo Lancaster Airport in Western New York. Bob, thanks very much for joining us today.
As always, it's my pleasure, Paul.
You wrote in your June edition of Over the Airwaves an article entitled Fly High for Smoother Rides. At first, I kind of did a double take at that because, especially in the summertime, and you start the article with summer now upon us, the uneven heating of the Earth's surface can cause bone-jarring rides at altitudes below 4,000 feet. My experience in the summertime has been that it can cause occasional bone-jarring rides at flight level 410. What kinds of things are we trying to fly high enough to avoid?
Well, I think the operative phrase that I used in here was the unequal heating of the Earth's surface. Here in Western New York and large parts of the United States, but certainly here where the population is a little denser, we have areas where we have freshly plowed fields, acreages for farms, and then we have heavily vegetated areas where we have green, lush vegetation absorbing the heat and the freshly plowed fields reflecting the heat. We therefore get rising columns of air followed by sinking columns of air, and that's all a result of just the advection of air up and down in response to the changing conditions of the Earth's surface. And my experience is if we can get just above almost 3,000, 4,000 feet AGL, we can begin to see those forces mitigated and get back into smoother air. There's also something that occurs at the 3,000 to 4,000 foot area, and that we call that the boundary layer, and that's an invisible layer where the smooth continental flow of the air is interrupted by the air that's moving up and down as a result of the unequal heating of the Earth's surface and the friction caused by buildings and structures and hills and valleys and whatnot. And again, that boundary layer is a zone that once we get above that, chances are the flight conditions are going to be much smoother.
Well, I have noticed, too, that as seems to be popular at many small rural airports, the place where I learned to fly had a runway where on a normal day we'd use runway 02. On, you know, days when the wind was doing something odd, we'd use runway 20. And if you came in over 20, you were coming in over a large pond. And that had a tendency to surprise a bunch of people who thought they had plenty of height on final.
That's an excellent example of what I was talking about, just the fact that the pond was reflecting the heat of the sun and the surrounding ground was absorbing it. We have conditions here at our local airport, the Akron Airport, just east of Buffalo, where it sits atop of an escarpment, a rising area or hill, and almost like a plateau it's sitting on. And when the winds are coming out of the northwest, the winds will roll up the side of that plateau, go over an area of trees, and then start a rotor condition that occurs on short final for its runway 25. Unexpected pilots not familiar with this phenomenon will get occasionally a very turbulent ride through short final right down to the runway. And that's an example, too, of where the Earth's surface or the contours of the Earth's surface can cause turbulence that once above that, again, 3,000, 4,000 feet AGL, we're mostly out of the effects of that.
Okay. I guess I have to ask, too, if you're going to be flying in the summertime when this is obviously a bigger problem than it is when snow covers the ground, at least in the parts of our listening area where that happens. Does it make sense to take any particular precaution or try any unusual tactics when you're flying into a small unknown airport for the first time? For example, do you want to commit to a touch and go on your first landing just to make sure that you're maintaining enough energy, you know, in case something, you know, surprises you at the last moment, or get a little practice for the real thing?
Well, certainly. Airspeed, of course, is always our friend. And when in doubt about the outcome of a landing, I always take the mindset that I'm going to go around, and that if conditions are favorable to a landing, I'll consider that a blessing, if you will. The mindset to go around leaves a spring loaded to deal with anything unexpected, such as rotor clouds on the short final or conditions which may make it impossible to land safely, stiff crosswinds or gusty crosswinds. With that mindset, then go around and come back and try it again. The other thing that we try to do is carry just a little bit of extra airspeed to give us a little bit more control authority with the air going or the wind going over the control surfaces of the airplane. Another thing is local knowledge. Talk to people at airports where situations may be more unusual than others. I'm thinking, for example, of the Falwell Airport in Lynchburg, Virginia. Anybody who has been into that airport recognizes that it's probably the most unique airport in the United States in that its runway is situated almost on a 30-degree incline. And landing into a 30-degree incline requires a little bit of advanced thought and preparation.
Yes.
Similarly, taking off with that kind of an incline requires should require some discussion with local folks just to talk about it a little bit before attempting to do it on your own.
Well, and the things you normally assume about what is the right thing to do in a headwind or tailwind become a little bit different too.
Well, sure. I mean, we have that old argument. We have an upsloping runway, and that is on the tailwind direction of the airplane. So do we want to land upwind in with a tail upslope with a tailwind, or downslope with a headwind? These are things that we just have to simply sit down and think about for a second and just decide which might give us the better outcome.
We're talking with Bob Miller about some of the unique aspects of flying in the summertime, and we'll be back with more in a moment. I'm Paul Plack, and you're listening to a special feature from Aero News.
This is a story of two pilots. Our first guy, the one with Garmin Waas GPS, he just arrived home from a trip, ready to enjoy a nice home-cooked meal with his supermodel girlfriend.
Chérie, viens près moi.
But our other guy, the pilot without Waas, well, he couldn't quite make it home. Had to divert to an airport with an ILS approach. So now it's dinner from a vending machine in some crummy pilot's lounge. You know which pilot you want to be. Garmin Waas GPS. Follow the leader.
At Cirrus Design, we don't ignore the fundamentals of aviation design. We just give them an ingenious new interpretation. The Cirrus SR20 G2. Interested in a substantial airplane that remains practical and affordable? Whether you're a non-pilot looking to begin flying lessons, a pilot needing personal transportation, or a fleet customer selecting the best plane to meet the demands of a multiple aircraft operation, consider the SR20 G2. To learn more, call 888-750-9927 or check us out on the web at cirrusdesign.com.
Welcome back to this Aero News special feature. Paul Plack here with Bob Miller of Over the Airwaves, the journal for the proficient pilot. You can find it at overtheairwaves.com. We're talking about summertime, which it is now in the Northern Hemisphere, or is about to be in a couple of days. Bob, you also wrote about thunderstorm season and decision-making and what tools are available for pilots. You start out with the admonition that the only way to correctly deal with a thunderstorm is just to stay far, far away. And you mentioned 25 miles. I've heard anecdotal reports of pilots who thought that 10 miles was going to be far enough away and ended up getting hail out of a clear blue sky.
Yes, I think the 25-mile rule is definitely the preferable way to go. I heard a case not too long ago where a Learjet at 32,000 feet was pelted with what he thought was hail coming out of a Texas thunderstorm, and when he got on the ground, they examined the engine, and they found bits of dirt and small stones inside the engine turbine section. And what he did was he was atop of a tornado that was embedded in overcast clouds below. So if a tornado is strong enough to launch stones up to 32,000 feet, we can see the power of thunderstorms. So, yeah, the best way to deal with thunderstorms in any way, shape, or form is just to give them a wide berth.
Now, if you're flying VFR, ideally, you'll see the worst ones lying ahead. If you're flying VFR, though, on a kind of a chancy day, you may find yourself in a situation where you're kind of surrounded by them. What tools are available, and which ones can we count on to get us out of those circumstances?
Well, the very best tool, in my opinion, as far as for thunderstorm avoidance is concerned, is a good storm scope. I have a WX500 storm scope on my Cessna 210, and that has been a very, very reliable piece of equipment. It's looking for convection out 200 miles, and that's usually the first indication when we're operating in or near or around thunderstorms is when the storm scope begins to show some sparks. But keep in mind, when it's throwing off sparks, we're getting into a fairly mature side of the thunderstorm. Live radar is good, but that is only showing precipitation. Uplink NEXRAD radar, or NEXRAD images, weather images, they offer a great opportunity for some strategic planning to give wide berth to a developing area of thunderstorms. And then there's ATC. ATC has the ability to, both from other pilot reports and from its own weather detection equipment, they too can give us insight as to what lies ahead weather-wise. But I think the operative thing is just if there's thunderstorms in the area, certainly if there is a line, give them a wide berth. But the one area or the one subject you touched on that I think is particularly interesting is this notion of being in a field of thunderstorms or where thunderstorms are developing seemingly all around us and developing very quickly.
Right.
Yeah, this can be a uniquely challenging situation because a thunderstorm can evolve in just a matter of seconds from calm skies to severe weather in a very, very short period of time.
If this happens to you very often, equip your plane with Tundra tires because that bean field might be plan A.
Yeah, well, exactly right. But it can catch you by surprise. Let me just tell you one quick example where I was indeed caught by surprise. I was flying, in fact, to Oshkosh several years ago at 11,000 feet, and my daughter was sleeping in the front right seat. And as I was motoring along on the autopilot, all of a sudden I saw the vertical speed indicator begin to shoot upwards at 1,500 to 2,000 feet a minute. And I discovered myself in the developing stages of a thunderstorm caught in an updraft. And I had to call ATC for an immediate clearance to higher because there was nothing I could do but ride it up. And we went from 11,000 feet to 17,000 feet at almost 2,000 feet a minute. And then I, of course, strapping myself down tighter and my daughter down tighter, I was fully expecting to hit the other side where there would be downdrafts. And that would cause us to plummet earthward. Fortunately, I came out the top, and once I got to the top of it, there was nothing, and we just kind of motored along and then resumed our assigned altitude. Point being in this message, even with storm scope, even with live radar working, and even talking with ATC, a thunderstorm can develop in very unexpectedly, very, very quickly. So when in an area where the conditions are right for thunderstorms, be on the alert. Those conditions, let me just add very quickly, heat, moisture, and some instability in the atmosphere. Those are the three requirements in order to form a thunderstorm. And when the dew point gets up over 70 degrees Celsius, Fahrenheit, be on particular alert for the possibility of thunderstorms.
Well, and if you've ever had your butt saved by a pilot report, the next time you're in the area and something like that happens, make sure you file one because other people are counting on you.
No question. Pilot reports should be filed at any time there's an unusual weather activity out there.
Bob, we appreciate it as always, and I will talk to you again next Monday.
Thanks, Paul.
Bob Miller has been my guest. You can find out more at overtheairwaves.com. You've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. Find us on the web at www.aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.